Sports fans were spoiled for choice over the weekend with both international and national events featuring prominently. Brian Waddle joins with his regular sports chat. And of all the events, it was the football in Wellington that grabbed your attention, Brian?
Yes, Susanna, it was. Don't often go to football. I'm more a rugby cricket man, hockey perhaps. But, you know, I've been fascinated by the white All Whites. They don't come together very often. I think they've only played about five games in the last 12 months. And they'd had this nil-all draw against China in Auckland. And I was interested to see, with my feet up on the stool and watching from the couch, as we do, how they were playing. I wish I'd gone now, because they won the game by 2-1. And it was a game that was impressive. They were fast and vigorous in the attack. They had a lot of good young players. And, you know, they are relatively young in terms of experience, you know, early 20s in terms of average age. That was added to a little bit later in the game when Costa Barbarousis came on, and he's sort of like the godfather of New Zealand football at the moment. He's playing at the age of 33, so lifted the average age up. But, boy, it was entertaining, and I was delighted that they were able to get up and win the game 2-1, as they did, because it's encouraging for the future of these young people. As I say, they don't come together very often. It amazes me that they're able to form a group of players in front of a new coach, or with a new coach, to actually develop the talent that they have. It was great to watch.
And there'd been a lot of talk, right, in the lead up to the event, that the All Whites, and about their inability to score goals, but they managed to settle that issue too, didn't they?
Yeah, although it was in a very strange way. Firstly, they'd had a penalty given, and the penalty was taken by a young player by the name of Alex Grieve. And he missed it. It's one of those things where you look and say, oh, gosh, that was simple, and it was a soft shot. The keeper was able to save it, and I thought they were never going to be able to do it. It was almost like Murphy's Law to a certain extent. And then it was the first goal came by way of an own goal from the head of one of the Chinese defenders. So while they had a goal in the net, it was not one of their own making. It was just a little later on that they were able to put a second on the board. Matthew Garbutt, was the player who scored. But when you look back, they'd played over 10 hours, I think somebody calculated, against other sides, played five games, Peru, Oman, Costa Rica, and a couple against Australia without scoring a goal. So that's a long time, and that's why the questions were posed about their inability to score. But, you know, they'll be happy to come away with that two goals, even though one of them might well have been an own goal. And they will now break up for an indefinite period before they have another chance to play against an international side. So it was great to watch, and it was just one of many sporting events that attracted the attention. I mean, it was a couch potatoes dream, really, to spend the whole weekend just watching. I mean, I'm sure you put your feet up, Susanna.
Yes, well, I like to be a couch potato, you know, just to get to the crux of the matter. I'm with you there. Let's talk about the Black Caps recording a 198-run win over Sri Lanka, starting the weekend international success. But that margin must have been a little surprising, right?
Well, certainly the margin was. I don't think many people expected it to be quite comprehensive to score 274 and then beat them by 198 runs. I think many people might have thought that they were going to win, but the thing about this side, of course, is that it was a relatively new side, with many of the first-choice ODI players away playing in the IPL. They needed to get a new bunch of players, and there were some debutantes there playing their first game of ODI cricket for New Zealand. Shipley, the seam bowler, Ravindra, who's played test matches and T20s, but not ODIs. And they acquitted themselves pretty well. 274, as I say, when they were in batting, and where you normally have five bowlers in innings, the way that Sri Lanka were dispatched, they only needed four of those bowlers, Shipley, Mitchell, Tickner and Matt Henry. They didn't even have to use Ish Sodhi, who is the spin bowling option. So it was an outstanding performance by them, bearing in mind that New Zealand has a World Cup to go to later in the year. Some of these players may or may not feature. There's about 9 or 10 of the more experienced players who are playing in the IPL, and they'll probably go to the World Cup in India later in the year, where they'll take a 15-man squad. So great performance by the New Zealanders, and of course there's still a number of those games still replayed against Sri Lanka before a team heads off to Pakistan.
Plus, the weekend started on the back of the Cricket Awards, didn't it, with those major titles going to Daryl Mitchell and Amelia Kerr. Were you surprised? Any surprises there?
No, not really. With those who got the awards, I think they were thoroughly deserved. You look at the Debbie Hockley medal. It's the first time it's been presented to Debbie Hockley, putting her name to the Supreme Award for Women's Cricket. Amelia Kerr getting that, and the Richard Hadlee, Sir Richard Hadlee medal, won by Daryl Mitchell, who's been a dominant feature of the international scene for New Zealand in all formats of the game, particularly in the Test arena. In the 12-month period, he scored nearly 1,000 runs, 913, averaging 70. They're really good figures. Four centuries. I suppose the only surprise in there to some extent was the fact that Kane Williamson, who generally picks up an award of one kind or another, got absolutely nothing in this year's awards. So it shows how well other players have done to get to the position that they have. Susie Bates won an ODI Player of the Year award. Michael Bracewell, who's been another star of the domestic international scene. Glenn Phillips, Tom Blundell won the Test Player of the Year. And any number of awards were put out there for players to celebrate their achievements. The interesting part about it, of course, is there's still another 2 to 3 weeks of the cricket season to go. So if somebody comes along and does something outstanding, they won't get awarded for it this year. Although, well, let's face it, the awards go to the international players, and most of those guys have been rewarded for what they've done over a 12-month period rather than just the short frame of time that there is.
Right. Let's talk about red cards in sport, which is a subject that you've covered in recent weeks, and more were delivered in recent days.
Yeah, indeed. And one of those came for one of the football players, the man who's the captain of the side, and he was basically given a red card. Not that it was one that he didn't deserve. I think he was caught fouling a player who had every opportunity to probably score a goal in the first game that they played. And so he missed out on the game that they played and won, which was a great performance. Disappointing for Tommy Smith, though, that he was playing his 50th game and got sent off on it. So a red card for him. But the interesting thing that's happened is that there was a red card that I spoke about two or three weeks ago for an England player in the Six Nations against Ireland. He was sent off just before half-time in that game because an elbow made contact with the head of one of the Irish players that they were playing, Hugo Keenan. And at the time, it looked a very harsh penalty. It almost had the accidental look about it, but the moment somebody gets hit around the head, of course, that is when the referees and the judiciary come into the being. But a disciplinary, an independent disciplinary committee reviewed the evidence, had a look at the video link, and decided that there were sufficient mitigating factors that caused the collision, and the red card didn't stand. But, of course, what happens is a side plays with one player down, and those 14 players have a hard task ahead of them. The chances of winning with 14 are difficult, and I think that that was the case for England in that game. My belief is, and I'm still a fan of it, is that players should be sent off and perhaps get a red card, but they should be allowed to replace them. I know that there is a body of opinion that doesn't agree with that, and that's fine. But I feel that when you watch a game of sport at the top level, you want to see 15 against 15 or 11 against 11. You don't want to see sides that are short of players. And that's the thing that happened in this game, because the referee had sent him off, but now an independent panel has decided that he had no penalty to serve. It's going to be interesting too, because World Rugby is now looking at what is likely to be an innovative change that could mean players rather get yellow cards now. And if the television match official who has been watching the proceedings has a 10-minute period to have a look and assess whether it is worth a red card. And, you know, it might prevent some of those mistakes from being made. It still will mean that players or sides will be down to 14 members. But I'm sort of the opinion that, you know, somewhere along the line that needs to be changed. I know there are a lot of people agree, but there are a lot of people who disagree when it comes to doing that. You know, if your discipline is so bad and you get a red card, then you probably deserve it. But I tend to wonder sometimes whether the fact that a player isn't carrying the ball is the reason why they get penalty. I mean, some players who are ball carriers, and particularly the game of rugby in a body contact sport, you know, they go towards the ground, their head comes in contact with knees, hips, shoulders, arms. Who's to blame? Generally, it's the person who's not got the ball, and sometimes that may not be fair, but that's a personal opinion of mine.
No, I'm with you. There's a lot going on. There is a lot going on. When contribute, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah, well, referees have a heck of a job to do, and we accept that, but they also do have the video replays now, and that to me is an important part of the game, that they can get things right. Well, on this occasion, they didn't quite get it right.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's go to golf. And very encouraging, isn't it, to see our top golfers enjoying lucrative success in recent weeks, Danny Lee, Ryan Fox, but not everyone celebrating Lee's win, right, because of his involvement with the Saudi-backed Golf League?
Yeah, that is the one negative, but I guess he has a right to do that. The Live Golf, as they call it, has come onto the scene, and they have a massive amount of money that comes out of Saudi Arabia. And, of course, there's a lot of people who believe that it's ill-gotten money to some extent. And, of course, the human rights situation in that country comes and is exposed. And Danny Lee decided after 11 years he wanted to change, to go and play in the Live Golf. This is when I sort of start thinking, I wish I'd taken up golf and become good at it many, many years ago, because he just picked up a prize of 6.3 million New Zealand, about 4 million US dollars. So, you know, to go on top of the sort of $16 million he's won over 11 years on the PGA circuit, he's got a lucrative career. Or, you know, as he said at the time, the money doesn't matter so much now. He's got his superannuation package. And I think we could all live well on a 16 million superannuation package. You could, couldn't you, Susanna?
I'd be quite happy with that. I would, Brian. You're quite right there. It's a tidy sum. It's a tidy sum.
Indeed, yeah, and you wouldn't have to worry too much about working too hard for a living. Ryan Fox, of course, he's also winning big. I think in the last month or so he's won about $1 million in prize money just by virtue of the fact that he's been either winning or thereabouts to the top players in major American competitions. And I think that he's now qualified. I'm sure he's qualified for the Masters in a couple of weeks when that is a major event. And, of course, his ranking around the world has been increased. And it's great because, I mean, he's an excellent golfer and one of those players who generally comes home, supports the New Zealand game, it's great to see him being successful. We often think that success comes easy to a lot of the people, but there's a lot of hard yards they have to do to get to where they are. And we've got a few young golfers I know around Wellington, where I am, Daniel Hillier, who's gone through the development phase of the game and is now a professional, is starting to earn money, but it'll take him a while to earn some of the sort of dollars that Danny Lee and Ryan Fox, but that's a great reward for the hard work they put in. And it's a good superannuation package that we could all wish we had.
You got that right. Now, the Chiefs continue to lead the way in the Super Rugby Pacific, unbeaten after five rounds, and the Hurricanes have moved into second place after a commanding win on Saturday night over Moana Pacifica.
Yeah, big win. 59-0 they won. Huge. And that has helped them up into second place. I've got to admit, you probably would know that I'm a Hurricane fan being out of the capital, but they're just a couple of points behind the Chiefs, or 4 points behind, because the Chiefs haven't been beaten. The Hurricanes have been beaten by the Blues. And those two sides are going to meet in a couple of weeks, I think. They're due to play each other. I'm not sure where it's going to be staged. It might well be at the home of the Chiefs. I'm just searching for the... they're going to be playing the Force, the next game, the Hurricanes, and then they have to play against the Chiefs in a couple of weeks. So, that'll be an interesting game, and it's good that, they continue to perform, these New Zealand sides. In fact, it was a clean sweep for the New Zealand teams. The Crusaders won pretty comfortably over the Brumbies. They had a home game. The Chiefs had a 24-14 win over the Waratahs, and the Highlanders, who had been struggling in the early part of the competition, finally got it together. They beat the Fijian Drua 57-24. And the Blues, after a few issues towards the end of the game, they started with a hiss and a roar, but then found the Force from Western Australia, a difficult set of opponents, but they still managed to win at 30-17. So, the table looks pretty good. Chiefs, Hurricanes, Brumbies have got in the way of the Blues and the Crusaders completing the top five. But, it's still early stages. There's a lot of time left to be taken care of in terms of that competition. And we look with interest towards that.
Exactly, we sure do. And the Warriors, they added to the weekend feats of sport for Auckland fans with a come-from-behind win over the Bulldogs, didn't they, to hold on to fourth place?
Yeah, they did. And the interesting thing is that I think when if you watch television, you like to have a look at the crowds that are there. And I think that the Warriors probably had a better turnout than the Blues did in terms of crowd numbers. The strange part, and I don't think either sporting body can do too much about it, was they were both down to play in Auckland at the same time, one at Eden Park and the other at the Mount Smart Stadium, where the Warriors are playing at home. And I mean, it's tough because, I mean, sporting fans wouldn't... I'm not great on watching replays or watching games that I know the result of. Now, you can't hide forever listening to the news bulletins, so you get to know the score in some of these particular games. But the most impressive thing is that they've finally been able to get some consistency about what they're doing.
Yeah.
They have won two games in a row, which, in the past it was win-loss, 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 and their record seemed to suffer accordingly. But they did a great job in cleaning up the Cowboys. They took them out the 16-14. It was Sean Johnson, actually. He got a late try that was converted, which gave them the win. So, a last-minute effort, and the job was completed.
Well played, right? Now, just to close, could you tell me about the fascinating story that emerged late last week with the referee and the spectator's mobile phone? What happened? What happened exactly, Brian?
This is one of the bizarre stories from sport. It happened in Egypt, and the referee, he's been suspended, in fact, for using a spectator's mobile phone to disallow a goal in a league match. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to do that? Oh, look at my phone. It's no goal. Take it back. And this is basically how it all happened. They don't have video assistants, what they call the VAR, video assistant referee, in the Egyptian second competition, second division. But the referee used the phone to watch a replay after the home side had protested. There was a handball. He had a look at the phone and the picture, and he decided to rule it out. And that created all sorts of consternation. I could imagine me going down and watching a game of rugby and the Hurricanes don't get a try, they should, and I just throw my phone down to the referee and say, "Here, have a look at this." That's quite a bizarre situation. Anyway, this guy and his whole team have been suspended from refereeing. The referee's name was, I think it was Mr. Mohammed Farouk, and he had to leave the ground under police protection
Whoa.
amid protests from players and officials. You can imagine what that would be like. I mean, you sort of think of some competitions that are played in the most difficult conditions and places, but here we are somewhere in the heart of Egypt. A referee has used the cell phone. I think that that's clever to some extent, but not really the way we want to see things happen.
Yeah, talking about having to live with your decision. Brian, it's been a treat talking with you tonight and wishing you well for the coming week of sport.
Indeed, and to you too, Susanna.
Thank you very much. All the best.